Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media, political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Conversations with Eagle Flower this 20th day of July, 2022. As always, I like to welcome all of the listeners to Revolution Radio, who come from far and wide. And as we recognize from many cultures, creeds, and nationalities around this world. And yes, we all do come to this table of life to learn from each other in the best possible way. And we acknowledge that no race, no person is better than another. And we all experience this gift of life from our mutual creator. And thank you for listening to Revolution Radio and supporting us here, as we are a listener-supported station. And we always like to remind you to step on into our regular screen here for Revolution Radio. And on the top of the page, you will be able to find our posted schedules and our archives, which are fantastic and free. And they go back quite a number of years. I know they've been sorting through them here and there to add more and more as they can. And as always, I like to do a special shout-out to our Chatsy Chatters, and whether you're listening now or later. My Eagle Flower saying is, let's learn together and build our best future. How is everyone today? Understanding that so much of the Northern Hemisphere is going through extreme heat prostration, shall we say, and this country is going through its own changes, lots of humidity and high temperatures here also, and hopefully we can all just relax a little bit and try to keep our cool in more ways than others. What I decided to do today, and it's going to go basically full circle, is start with a basic idea. And for whatever reason, I decided to read to you my journaling that I've done here in July. Several pages of it. I never know where it's going when I do start writing, and I just thought, you know, some of this is worth our attention. And I don't mean to be doing overt criticism to any particular person at this point. Some of it relates to a lot of the activity that was going on back in June, I think, with the station and some of the ramifications and fallout that we saw happening in the chat room, and that's what I'm referencing. But in a way, the reason I want to bring this up is for us to take a different look at it, because right now the chat room is nice and quiet. You can come in, you can talk if you want, you can just be with pals and friends. And I must underline it that, or underscore that, for the most part right now, our chat room is very quiet and friendly, which is how we like to see it. So I'll begin my journaling page. It started on 1 July, and it was titled, What is Our Vision? With all of the complaining and bitching about what is not right with this world, what are we doing to improve and alter this direction that so many are now focused on? All right, I'm waiting. More than anything, here at Revolution Radio, we have an opportunity to discuss things. Discuss is the operative word. No, not arguing, not attempting to ridicule, denigrate, or wipe up someone else's face with crap. Have we forgotten how to resolve issues? We can only start with ourselves. Have we considered that with every problem cited, we should and can offer a possible solution? Or are we so focused on how we cannot move, cannot do anything, that we lose countless opportunities to fortify ourselves in ways that are not as of yet imagined? Individually, if our attention remains on the inadequacy of others, when do we see their better side? How can we possibly tackle the bigger issues of this life and world if we are unable to deal with our personal triggers? After all, this pattern of our various triggering is well known by others, and they use it quite successfully against us if we allow the triggering to grow. Wise ones often remind us that if someone or something triggers us, we should and must ask ourselves why that triggering happens. Why does it bother me? Are others a mirror of something within us that has not been dealt with? And while observing how others act and react to certain people or topics, one can begin to see how we are affected by others in similar situations and how we affect others, intentionally or not. All too often in this virtual technology world, we hear others announce that certain events have occurred. We have no idea of this announcement's accuracy or verifiable source most of the time. Then, as others declare similar or the same event, we usually presume their accuracy. Truth be told, they may all be using the original single source as their reliable source. More and more, it becomes increasingly difficult to parse out what might be staged or is partially accurate or just plain propaganda. And other keyboard warriors feel compelled to forward these various topics as news. Moving back to discussing and talking things out, many speak of arguing, implying that this is a discussion. No, it is just arguing, and no one listens when trying to prove a point. Instead, both sides become more deeply entrenched in proving their point of view. Discussing is a time of allowing others to present their views and to provide their documentation if necessary. Discussing happens when ears and eyes open and receive information while holding still a wagging tongue. All too often, we observe that one or more persons are so committed to their position and feel compelled that their point of view is the only correct one. And a more reserved person can easily see through such arrogant stances. Remember that oftentimes arrogance denotes ignorance and or blindness. Having a discussion implies giving others basic respect, allowing them to state their opinions or stance. It is an open two-way road where both or many can learn from others. It is not a case of winning over the other. Conflict continues if someone is totally bent to prove that their stance is the only correct one. Our Western society is so deep into competition and competing that we often do not recognize how deeply it affects us in the most basic of ways. We are taught that someone must win, sometimes at all costs. We have lost the ability to consider other points of view, and if necessary, to negotiate so that we each walks away with mutual feeling of a good deal. Discussion can lead to arbitration if necessary. However, discussing it is better if both parties can reach out to the other side of the table for mutual benefit. All too often in chat, one observes or is in the midst of a written diatribe and fight. This format lends itself behind the curtain of some anonymity to foist on others in ways that would seldom be done during a face-to-face. Words of accusations get flung around. Bullying and name-calling infuse the screen. What is the purpose in conducting a discourse in such a way? Those who watch may find such conduct as entertaining, while others shake their heads and watch these ongoing disputes, seemingly looking like little children having a temper tantrum who have not learned how to converse in civil ways. Why are some so eager to behave this way, as if we are to excuse their poor conduct because the heat of the moment forced them to write such vindictive and nasty words? Really? Why do some give themselves permission to act this way? Yes, giving themselves permission to strike out at others, attempting to intimidate. What is the purpose? Why? Maybe we should give ourselves permission to behave like adults and treat others with courtesy. And further down the line, on 9 July, I wrote, to consider. Unless we personally experience something, how can we possibly know that something we are told has happened? Or is the way as it's being told? And even if we experience something, are we correctly interpreting it? There is no simple or quick answer. So much of how we interpret sensations, current events, of what we hear, all go to how our minds send confirmation symbols to our brains and consequent interpretations of them. If we believe in good, bad, and evil, that is how we perceive things and make conclusions to follow this line of beliefs. Taking the most recent event of the Georgia Guidestones being hit and later demolished, we have heard various conclusions and causes of thereof. We hear about benign influences and the timing of CERN and a lightning strike, and the list goes on of what caused those guidestones to get hit. These recent years have brought forward suspicions in all directions, from NASA, Ukraine, 5G, weather manipulation via all types of modes, flat Earth, and the list goes on and on. How can we possibly not fall into a rut of presuming and believing that everything is caused by them. When do natural activities from earth, wind, fire, and water get recognized as just that, a natural activity? Must everything be caused by them, the hidden hand? And the more that the humans desecrate and mess around with these natural elements, Mother Nature surely reacts stronger. Have you observed how often a point of view goes viral? Within a short time, many folks joined that bandwagon, asserting its authenticity and veracity. Suddenly, conjecture becomes fact. It is so easy to get caught up in the moment and go along with this wave of information. Admit it, we have all done it. So much of these activities are dual for us. The obvious is that many are distractions if we grab onto them and become mono-optic without really giving alternate perspectives a full evaluation. Initially, what might sound very convincing can fall apart with decided scrutiny. And one of the best ways to scrutinize is to not get emotionally caught up. Yes, scrutinize while remaining emotionally neutral. And that's not always easy to do. A second way to pursue the purpose of these various intrusions is to consider how it can be made into an opportunity. First, consider the possibility that what is initially thought to be an enemy or threat could actually be an attempt to get our attention and thereby to force our attention on dealing with unfinished or unresolved things. Have you noticed when doing introspection and evaluating that fear and helplessness are major contributors to your personal maze of issues? You already have personal things to resolve. And inevitably, fear and helplessness seem to heavily contribute to this maelstrom. Both fear and helplessness are lifelong, indeed civilization-long, methods of maintaining us in a controlled regimen. Are we victims or survivors? And I contend that we are here and we are survivors. July 12. Though we may hear rumbling beneath our feet, we question what might be causing it. Unfortunately, we do not trust any answers that authorities might give. We live in shaky times, and quite literally the ground does move in places that are not known to have tremors and swarms in recent years. And of course, the volcanoes are rising too, aren't they? If we look and assess at how this world, this earth, does move, we realize that old lines of dormant land mountain masses were all formed by various movements of earth plates. Since this is a time of movement, why do we expect less of Mother Earth? These energies affect her as much as they do to us. There may be shallow tremors beneath our feet or deep ones, yet not felt. Yes, minor tremors beneath our feet can lightly jostle a certain area to gently break loose a knot, preventing a more serious one. These various energies affect everyone and everything here. And this time of massive transitioning continues a pattern of nature doing her thing. Though quite literal in feeling tremors, we can use this opportunity to review and be more allegorical. We relate the firmness of the ground as always being solid. We hear reminders that life is always shifting and changing, usually relating it to ourselves and not to Mother Earth. Is it time for each of us to take lessons from the elements of earth, wind, fire, and water? And can we use them to our advantage? Actually, the word use is not correct. Can we consciously relate with them? In a certain way, each of these elements can be fluid, airy, and solid. They can be hot or cold, docile and gentle, or powerful and vehement. Do we give ourselves permission to listen and learn? Do we hear their messages? Do we embrace the wind, allowing its force to blow away the droves? Do we melt with the water and liquefy, finding respite and cleansing and rejuvenation? And can our inner fire glow brightly while purifying and protecting? Do we become one with the earth while aligning with her electrical, magnetic, and polarity? And I think you've probably heard me say that the liquefying of the earth is possible, and I've been in a major quake when I felt and witnessed it. So there's never anything really solid beneath our feet. Going back to finding our natural rhythm, on the 15th of July, I woke up and this little poem came. It's called The Mists of Fog. Woke up to fog hugging the hills this gray morn, the dew so heavy on the grass blades, as if it had rained overnight, the gray mist coating the grassy fingers and in between seemed to offer respite and solace to a world so in need. Recent days have brought so much disarray and angst, treachery, and fear. Somehow Mother Nature knows how to soothe us to silence and wake up serene. The quelling of emotions, the offering of respite, can soothe man's souls, or so it is said. But for it to occur, humanity must move to a place in the heart and accept it. Can we find comfort? Are we willing to let go of old tensions and search within to resolve old hurts, old causes that limit our personal world? Or are we standing at the doorway, not willing to open and enter to the unknown? Have we come to this place not seeing that there are options to choose? Yes, growing up is less painful when we realize that we have options and our choices can be so freeing. Time and again, wise ones say in many ways that we must look at ourselves within ourselves to find our answers. Are we so busy about proving how others cause our demise that we lose perspective on how life actually flows? It is so easy to blame others for our iniquities and shout, "I didn't do this or cause this." Yet if we look more closely, we may discover that we indeed placed ourselves right where we are at, like it or not. So have you considered that all of this tumult and fighting, both in the world and within, are symptoms of our unresolved searching for answers? Is it possible that what seem to be our enemies are actually provoking us to face our weaknesses and what needs fixing? Much like the famous coyote of lore nudging us to act and react to move us out of our inner deceit and lies. In spite of how much others interfere with the natural flow, is it possible that nature provides an amped up version to overcome these interferences? Can you decipher what is natural and what is not? Is it possible that until we find our true safe haven, those symptoms might be very similar? Something to deeply consider. Do we pride ourselves by saying that we stay out of the fray while listening to and reporting it every day? Do we fall into the sinkhole of confusion, not able to see a way out of this delusion? Do we limit ourselves in subtle ways and don't give ourselves permission to think of better possibilities. Action, they say, we must be proactive. Yet how we must do it remains a mystery, seldom brought up for discussion. No matter the game, no matter the play, it comes back to us and how we perceive it. Are we just the audience watching, or do we finally realize that one act plays are ongoing? When do we get up from our seat and walk up the aisle, throw open the doors, and find some daylight? The choice is yours. Yesterday I came across someone had posted a link from Tarot by Janine. And I happened to come across a quick note in her website that I'm going to read. It's from yesterday. Quote, "We are entering a period of instant manifestation, and right now it is critical that you keep your focus only where it needs to be. Don't worry about things too far in advance, because you will in turn bring it right to you. Instead of worrying so much, take things as they come. Don't put yourself into a position where you will be greatly affected, like ignoring critical bills and so forth, but put less energy into constantly worrying about them, because people will be in this instant manifestation mode, and what you ask the universe for, it will be immediately brought to you. So learn how to communicate with the universe and feed the three-day matrix lifestyle and problems the absolute least amount of energy to maintain sustainability. If you constantly worry about bills every day, guess what's going to keep landing in your lap? Focus on your higher self and take things as they come. Make small preparations and scheduling where needed to survive for the time being, but back yourself out of constantly worrying about things you don't want to be in your life. Because now, more than ever, they will be brought to you. We are in the sorting of souls process. If you have been disconnected from family and friends, even friends you have known your entire life and have abruptly just had the relationship fall apart, this is a preparation for you and an indication that you and that person or people will not be going to the same destination. It's highly likely they either are going to go to 3D or they're not ascending and have a different destination. This sorting of souls process will become a lot more evident as the month plays out. Remember, from this period on, what you focus on will become. So if you have trouble with worrying about shit, prepare yourself to get smacked across the face with whatever it is that you worry about. See, I told you it would happen, is not being precognitive. You are literally manifesting it. There's a big difference. Same with all the conspiracy theorists. Same stuff. They are gloating because a lot of them came true. Well, that's because many focused on it and it became. You see how it works? This is the chapter where you will be forced to learn how to use this energy appropriately. And if you don't, what you manifest will become very quickly in your face. So anything 3D, let it go until it needs to be addressed, and give it the least amount of energy possible so you are not adding to its potential. Very soon, none of this stuff is This 3D life and everything in between will even matter. It will be gone. We are leaving it behind. So why focus on it now? Deal with what you have too, and let the rest fall by the wayside until it must be addressed. Within reason, of course. Don't put yourself out thinking you are going to ascend before your next rent payments and so forth. Instead, Manifest the rent being paid and handled instead of worrying about the date of the bill arriving. It's a great way to learn to manifest by saying, I am grateful for this particular thing being manifested for me. I trust that it is already in the works being brought to me or handled, and I am thankful for it. It's becoming. Try it and know that it's already in the works. Know you already have it. Trust that it is being handled and addressed. The rest will fall into place. And hope you have had a stellar day. In the end quote. The reason I wanted to read this is because I know she emphasizes, ascension and all that stuff. I get that. But basically, we've always been in this realm, but it seems like it's, as she is saying, more instant these days. And if this is one of our tests and trials right now, so be it. All of us, I would say 99% of us, have the habit of talking ourselves out of doing things. So this is something for us to consider. And be conscious of how we are talking to ourselves, much less talking with each other. That in itself can be an ongoing story. And today I thought I would spend the rest of the time reading again from Dr. J.T. Garrett and Michael Garrett's book, The Medicine of the Cherokee, The Way of the Right Relationship. And today I'm going to read where he presents another story of the beginning of Mother Earth. And he goes on to say, this story has been told many times, but I want to tell it as it was told to me. In another time, the Cherokee spirit people were in the sky vault. It was getting crowded in the sky vault, and the Great One decided it was time for spirit beings to become physical beings and spread out of the sky vault. There was a great council meeting of all the spirit beings to decide on the plan. And the Great One said, those of you who choose to be a part of the creation of Mother Earth will also have to protect her. The Cherokee spirit people have been chosen to be keepers of the secrets and keepers of Mother Earth and all living things that go over into the physical world. They will be given the power medicine of choice to do this. Other human spirits of tribes will also follow, and they will be given the power medicine of choice to be keepers as well. Earth at that time was like a large island floating in a sea and held in place by four cords of life. The Great One said, these cords of life will hold Mother Earth suspended as long as everything is held in sacred balance. These spirit beings will include the four-legged ones, the two-legged ones, the many-legged ones, the no-legged ones, and the winged ones. Everything and everyone will live in harmony, interdependent on one another, for sustained life and regeneration of life. It was the first task of the animal clan to go down to learn what they could about this new earth. The little water beetle of the beaver's grandchild went first, fluttering around, but it could not find a place to land. Soon it dropped into the water many times, coming up with muddy feet. And that mud became islands. The bird clan said it wanted to go down because they could fly for long distances to search for a place to land. The great buzzard flew down, but he was so large that he tired quickly, and his large wings kept striking the water and churning up mud that made mountains and valleys until he returned home in the sky vault. By this time, Earth was dry where the animal clan and the bird clan stirred the mud from the water as the sun tracked across. The fish clan said they wanted to go down into the water and just stay there. But some wanted to be able to walk on the land. What we are now called the crawfish did crawl up on the red clay, and he was baked in the hot sun, so that today we call him the red crawfish. On the seventh day, some of the animal clan who were hiding in the mud because of the hot sun came up to take a look. The first of these was the worm, and he was burned so badly that we call him the red worm. It was still hot, and they called to the great one for help. And the great one came down on the seventh day, hearing the prayers, and brought many beautiful plants and trees to provide the air for the Cherokee to breathe into their lungs and become physical human beings. Of course, they were not used to breathing, so they had to rest that first day, but they would work for 6 days and learn to rest at night when the sun would rest. The Great One was very proud of the spirit beings for the good work they had done. He asked the thunder beings to strike a tree so that the fragile physical beings would have heat from the sacred fire. From that time on, all the animal, insect, bird, tree, plant, and human clans would give ceremony around the fire and dance for the sun to celebrate and honor the gift of life on a now living Mother Earth. Interesting story. There are so many different stories of how this Earth came to be and how humans came to be. And I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves of all these different varieties. Now I'm going to turn over into Michael's portion of the book and read the title of the chapter, start with All Our Relations. And he says, "It has been said by Wynne Hansen Dubray of Rosebud Sioux that, quote, about the most unfavorable moral judgment an Indian can pass on another person is to say, he acts as if he didn't have any relatives," end quote. The concept of relation is a way of life for many Native American people, and it is very important for good reason. Everything is thought of in terms of relation of one kind or another. That is the natural order of things. It is thus believed that we cannot possibly know where we stand without knowing where we are in relation to everything else. Upon meeting for the first time, many Native American people will ask, "Where do you come from? Who's your family?" This is because they are wanting to know where they stand in relation to this new person and what commonality exists. In fact, this is a simple way of building bridges or recognizing bridges that already exist but are as yet unknown. It is also a way of honoring those bridges by appreciating them for what they are and by sharing. We are connected with all things, and we need only discover this truth to discover the power and beauty of relation. In the traditional way, we call upon all our relations for strength, guidance, and wisdom. We call upon our relations for comfort and for sharing. There is harmony and balance in the energy of our connections. And it is believed that one of the most powerful sources of strength and wisdom comes from the family with whom we are truly connected. Of course, family may or may not consist of blood relatives. It is common practice in the Native American traditional way, for instance, to claim another as relative, thereby welcoming him or her as real family. From that point on, that person is a relative, and that is that. After all, family is a matter of blood and of spirit. Family may be certain friends that have stuck by us through the years. It may be the parents who have sacrificed for us, protected us, and stuck by us through thick and thin. It may be an elder who has guided us through rough times and through good ones. It may be a special teacher who has always believed in us. It may be a pet that always seems to be there when we need him or her. It may even be a virtual stranger whom we met only recently but somehow really hit it off with from the first, with or without realizing that there is a special connection. You see, one universal truth that guides the whole of our experiences is that the spirit does not keep time. It only records growth. We need not have known someone for a long, long time to really know them or to feel a special connection with them. And this is an important opportunity for learning and for sharing. These are the things the spirit holds most dear. Think of all the special people in your life now, and all the special people that have been in your life during your time on Mother Earth. There is a very special feeling as the faces come to mind. Take a little time to see them all. Maybe certain experiences come to you. Something funny that happened, for example, or a difficult time that was shared with another and endured. What you feel is the energy of these connections that is a part of your essence and your memories. This is the blood of your spirit running warmly through you. It is from the energy of these connections that we draw much strength and guidance. It is also through these powerful connections that we receive much wisdom, understanding, and growth, even if we have to get it the hard way. There is an old Cherokee story about the origin of strawberries that relates this lesson very well. A long, long time ago, when Mother Earth was young, the Great One created a man and a woman who lived together in harmony and loved each other very much. Things were going very well for the man and woman until one morning, when the woman became very angry with the man and walked out of their lodge, slamming the door shut behind her. The man, who did not understand why the woman had become so angry, thought to himself, "She must not be feeling well," and left it at that. Hours passed, and the woman did not return. The man began to worry and went outside to look for her, but she was gone. Way off in the distance, he could see her climbing the mountain to the west. And he began to get little tears in his eyes. He set off after her, but he knew that she was too far away, and he would not be able to catch up. Now he was crying out of sadness for losing her, and he began to pray with his head in his hands. "Oh, Great One," he pleaded desperately, "I love her so much, and she has gone away. I will never be able to catch up, and I do not know what to do." "What is the problem?" asked the Great One. This made the man a little angry, because the Great One is supposed to know everything that happens and why. Besides that, the man didn't really know what the problem was or why the woman had left. He was very sad, though, and could not think straight, but he did his best to explain what he knew. "Are you sure you did not do anything?" asked the Great One. "I don't know," replied the man. "Are you sure that you did not fail to do something?" asked the Great One. "I'm not sure," sighed the man. "She's getting further and further away, and I do not know what to do." "I know that your love for her is great, and your heart is true," said the Great One. "I will do what I can to slow her down." The man expressed much thanks and continued on his journey up the mountain. Meanwhile, the Great One caused a huckleberry bush full of ripe huckleberries to spring up along the woman's path. But the woman was so angry that she ignored the huckleberries and didn't even slow down. Next, the Great One put some prickly blackberries along her path, thinking that the blackberries would stick to her clothes and make her slow down. As the woman walked through the blackberries, they stuck to her clothes, but she just ignored them and didn't even look down. I have to stop here. As I'm reading this, I'm getting this idea. You got two men trying to figure out what's going to slow down this woman. Okay, back to the book here. Aha, thought the Great One. I must make her look down in humility before she will stop and listen to what is in her heart. So he put a little plant on the ground with leaves that hid a luscious, sweet-smelling fruit shaped like a heart. When the woman came to the little plant, the aroma was so wonderful that she got down on her knees to find out what smelled so good. When she bowed her head to pick one of the fruits and saw the beautiful little heart-shaped berries, she let go of her anger and forgot why she had been angry in the first place. The first thing she thought was to pick some of these delicious strawberries for her husband, whom she loved with all her heart. She picked only the smaller ones so that the big ones could grow, and she gave thanks to Mother Earth and the Great One for offering this special gift. Then she started home toward the east. Before long, she saw her husband in the distance coming toward her. Excitedly, she ran to him, and they hugged each other for a very long time in the setting sun. Then she gave him the bright red strawberries she had picked for him, and together they gave thanks to the Great One for being reunited once again. The woman thought about how sad she would have been to never see her husband again. She told him that she would never leave him, and just then she noticed that the little strawberries were very fragile and yet very beautiful. The man and the woman were thankful for their love of one another, and together they enjoyed the sweet, juicy strawberries that the Great One had provided to Mother Earth, and so it is good. Our connections serve a very important purpose for us, just as we serve a very important purpose in the beauty of the greater circle. All things are connected, and we are all related. For this and more, we have much to be thankful. The whole idea of relation is a very simple one, and yet it is a very powerful in the way that it guides a life, a way of thinking, a way of acting and being. Here, too, the idea of being is rooted in the notion that we need only seek our place in the universe and everything else will follow. But in order to do so, we must first honor all our relations, treating them with kindness and respect. We must see ourselves as a part of them and them as part of us. And we must be thankful. All things are connected. Let me illustrate using an example given to me by Medicine Grizzly Bear Lake, a Seneca Cherokee. If we are walking in the woods together and I bend down to pick up a stick asking you, "What is this?" You might reply, "It is a stick." And what if I say, "No, it is part of a tree." When we humans were once little spirits and wanted to come into physical form, there was one condition placed upon us. The Great One, or Creator of all things, allowed us little spirits to come into physical form, knowing that when this happened, our awareness would be limited. This is the way of things, and it is the way in which we grow and move beyond ourselves. Perspective offers us powerful lessons. As with the strawberries, and with the little stick lying in the woods. The lesson of the stick? We must see ourselves as part of the greater circle, no greater and no less, but part of it. All things are indeed connected, as Chief Seattle once affirmed, and we must honor all our relations by honoring and understanding the universal circle for what it is, a unity of interrelated and interdependent strands. The web is not a web without each and every one of its strands serving its purpose, no matter how great or small. All of this may sound complicated, but it is not. Things really only get complicated when we refuse to recognize the power of the whole, robbing ourselves and our world by seeing only separate and unrelated parts, such as unused resources or inanimate objects. It becomes even more complicated when we approach other people with the same mindset. This is a disruption in the natural flow of life energy, and it is harmful to ourselves and to all other living things. Mother Earth is teaching us a hard lesson right now by reacting to all our pollution, disrespect, and misuse of the gifts she has offered to us. Still, she continues to offer all her gifts to us, asking only in return that we treat her with the kindness and respect that we expect from her and from others. When the animals hold counsel, everyone's voice is heard, and everyone is respected for their unique contribution to this circle, even the little water spider. But everyone must give respect and kindness as well as receive it. Everyone must look for the beauty in all things, no matter how great or small. We must not only call upon all our relations for strength, guidance, and wisdom, but must be called upon in turn. There is a traditional saying, "If you know my family, then you know me." We all must realize that although we may come from different tribes, we are all of the same family and of one mother. And I'm going to start the next chapter. It's the true meaning of family. A long, long time ago, before Mother Earth existed as we know her today, there was only a planet of water surrounded by the universe. In Gullan Lati, or Sky World, the animals, plants, and rocks were very crowded and needed more room. What they all needed was a home. So all the animals, plants, and rocks held a great council in the Sky World to decide what must be done. And everyone's voice was heard in the great council, which lasted for many days. And when everything was through, it had been decided that the little water beetle would go down from the Sky World and dive beneath the water of the planet to see what he could find. And so the little water beetle left the Sky World and dove beneath the shimmering blue water, going deeper and deeper, but he did not find a firm place until he reached the bottom. Then, with as much soft mud from the bottom of the great water as he could carry, water beetle swam back up to the surface. There the mud spread and spread until it became the island Earth. In the beginning, Earth was wet and soft, so the council in the Sky World sent Great Buzzard out to search for a place where all living things could go. And Great Buzzard flew down from the Sky World and soared over the soft Earth until he became very tired. Where his great big wings struck the earth, there were valleys, and where he rose to the sky, there were mountains. And this later became known as Cherokee Country. Now all the animals, plants, and rocks, and even the little spirits had a place where they could live, but there was still one problem. Earth was still very soft and wet. Next, the council in the Sky World asked for the help of Grandfather Sun, who agreed to do what he could do. And so the sun moved slowly around the earth from east to west, giving light and warmth to the land. And he was so impressed with its beauty that he too wanted to live in this new place. But he knew that he could not get too close because he was so hot and so bright that he would burn it up. So he decided to stay in the sky world, but to always move around Earth, admiring her beauty, giving her light and warmth and protecting her. And the animals, plants, and rocks in the sky world were very excited about their new home. They thanked Grandfather Sun and agreed to greet him each morning when he rose in the east and give thanks. Soon all the animals, plants, and rocks came down from the sky world to live on Mother Earth, and some of the little spirits even came. And those were the first people. And all lived together in harmony and balance as one family of many things. And all were thankful each day for life and for their beautiful Mother Earth. And this is the Cherokee story of how the world was made. And so it is good. We have always been of one family, and it is good to have life. In a single lifetime, we are given many gifts, not the least of which is Earth under our feet and the breath of life in our chest. And we all exist in community of one kind or another. Because the survival and well-being of the individual is synonymous with that of the community, family plays a prominent role in our lives, whether we realize it or not. Many Native American people are a family in a real sense because they identify themselves not by their own accomplishments, but by the nature of their relations and the energy they draw from those connections. However, it is important to realize that what the mainstream defines as family takes on a much broader view in the traditional way. Family relationships include much more than the biological connections of the nuclear family. For example, as mentioned before, the claiming of non-blood relatives as family is commonly practiced among Native American people who try to listen to the spirit of the relationship and honor it accordingly. And that is the end of this show, and that went by very quickly for me. I certainly hope you have enjoyed this show, and stay tuned for Deacon and Dude Guy. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
We will not comply with the institution's sick illusion. No, it won't be televised. Welcome to the
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction. Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion.